Great. We're carrying on in our series in Matthew. So we have got to Matthew 14 and 15 today, and we're going to look particularly at Matthew chapter 14, starting at verse 22, if you want to pull that up, or the words will be on the screen. So Jesus walks on water. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." So as I say, we are continuing with our series in Matthew. And we've been thinking, haven't we, all through this series about Jesus' invitation, "Come, follow me." I was struck at the beginning of the series when Tim talked about people, when they were following a rabbi, being covered in the dust of the rabbi, that they were walking so close to him as they walked along that they got covered in the dust that was kicked up by his feet, and that need that we have to walk closely behind Jesus. I love walking. It's one of my very favourite things to do. I love to get out in the fresh air and enjoy God's creation. And perhaps, particularly during lockdown, we all found that that was a bit of a joy, even just walking from our front door, listening to the birds in the trees around us, or looking at the flowers coming out. I have to say that my boys are a little bit less enthusiastic about walking. They have become a bit more tolerant over the years, and they do put up with me dragging them out on the occasional walk now. But I have quite a lot of stories over the years of just how clearly they have expressed to me that this is not what they would like to be doing. Last year, we went to the Lake District for a few days, and we had glorious weather. I'm not sure I've ever had a whole week in the Lake District without needing waterproofs, but we managed it last year. And we did lots of things. We didn't just walk. We did do lots of things. But we did do some walks, and we did one proper walk. That's what I call it, you know, where we walked up Coniston Old Man. And to be fair, it was a very hot day, and I hadn't taken enough water. But we'd got halfway up the mountain, and one of my boys, I won't mention him by name, looked at me and said, "Mum, I just don't understand why you think this is fun." The Bible contains a lot of walks, doesn't it? If we think about it, Adam and Eve were walking in the garden in the cool of the day with God. The people of the Israelites walked through the Red Sea and to the Promised Land. Moses walked up Mount Sinai to get the Ten Commandments. The disciples walked to Emmaus with Jesus after his death and resurrection. But the passage today tells us of a bit more of an unusual walk, when first Jesus and then Peter walked on the water. No dust being kicked up in this story. So let's look at this story and just have a think about what God might want to teach us about following him through it. So the story comes straight after the feeding of the 5,000. That's what happened just before this story. And so the disciples have had a pretty amazing day already. They've just seen Jesus feed 5,000 men plus women and children with just 5 loaves and 2 fish. They've just picked up 12 whole baskets full of leftovers. And then it says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side. And Jesus himself goes off to spend some time alone with God. Interestingly, that was what he actually set out to do at the beginning of the day. If you sort of glance back to verse 13, Jesus has just been told of what has happened to John the Baptist, of the terrible death that John the Baptist had. And he goes off by boat to go to a solitary place. But when he gets there, he finds a whole crowd meeting him, and he spends time healing them and teaching them and then feeding them. So Jesus goes off to have that solitary time with his Father. And the disciples are sailing on the lake through the night. It's dark and the weather turns. We're told that the boat is being buffeted by the waves because the wind is against it. In Mark's account of this story, in Mark 6:48, we're told that the disciples are straining at the oars because the wind was against them. It's worth just pausing for a minute here, because just remember that Jesus has put the disciples in the boat. He has told them to go ahead of him. They are doing exactly what Jesus has told them to do. And a bit like my son climbing up Coniston Old Man, they are finding it not very much fun. It's tough. And sometimes, of course, we find life tough because we choose to go our own way and not follow Jesus. And things sometimes get in quite a bit of a mess when we do that. But we need to understand that following Jesus is in no way a guarantee of an easy, stress-free life. These disciples are doing exactly what Jesus told them to do, and they have ended up in a storm, straining at the oars, struggling with the wind against them, and Jesus apparently nowhere to be seen. As a church, we've been thinking about the Open Doors World Watch List of the countries in the world where it is hardest to be a Christian. And we've been praying for our brothers and sisters in those places. And they know all too well that following Jesus can be extremely difficult. And at the very beginning of this chapter, we read the story of John the Baptist, who had spent his whole life preparing the way for Jesus to come, doing the job that God had given him, and then he was beheaded by Herod. Jesus promises us a lot of things when he invites us to come and follow him. He promises us his presence with us. He promises us his strength, his equipping, his peace that passes all understanding. But he doesn't promise us a comfortable, trouble-free life. And it's really important that we recognize that. Last week, Tom was looking at the parable of the sower, wasn't he? And remember that seed that fell on rocky ground. Jesus said that seed was someone who hears the word, at once receives it with joy, but since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes, they quickly fall away. We need to be those people with good roots. But the storm is not the end of the story, just as the storm is not the end of our story. We're told that just before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. I love how matter-of-fact that particular verse is. Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. But the disciples, like us, know that it is against all laws of nature for a person to walk on water. And so they see this person walking across the lake to them, and they're terrified. They think it must be a ghost. And just as in so many other places in the Bible, when God speaks to his people, the first words that Jesus speaks are, take courage, don't be afraid. We so often need to hear that, don't we? Take courage, be strong and courageous, don't be afraid, it is I. Jesus is with them, Jesus is with us in whatever the storm is that we're facing at the moment. Peter in some ways doesn't sound totally convinced about this, does he? His next words are, Lord, if it is you, tell me to come to you on the water. I think that's terribly encouraging, actually. It's easy to feel, isn't it, that our faith isn't good enough, we're not strong enough, God can't use us. But Peter says, if it is you, and Jesus says, come. Maybe you're in a position at the moment where you're not completely sure about Jesus. Maybe you've never made that decision to follow him and you're not quite sure who he is, whether he can do what he says he can. Or maybe you have been following him for a very long time, but actually just at this moment in time, you're struggling to believe that he is for you, that he's got your back, that he can be trusted in whatever situation it is that you find yourself in at the moment. Even just as we look at the news, maybe you're struggling with that. And the good news is that we don't have to pretend with him. We don't have to sort of make out that we know that we are more confident than we are. We can be honest. Jesus, if you're there, if it is you, help me, guide me. So Jesus invites Peter to come, and we have this incredible story of Peter getting out of the boat. Remember, the waves are still high, the wind is still blowing, it is still dark. Jesus hasn't calmed the storm yet. That happens later. But Peter gets out of the safety of the boat, and he walks towards Jesus. Amazing. It's easy, I think, at this point to kind of race forwards to the next verse where Peter stops looking at Jesus and starts to look at the waves and starts to sink and think, oh yeah, there you go, Peter's messed it up again. As Jesus said, you know, he of little faith. But remember, all the disciples were in that boat. And yes, Peter was the only one who began to sink, but he was also the only one that got to walk on water. A few years ago, John Ortberg wrote a book which was titled, If You Want to Walk on Water, You've Got to Get Out of the Boat. It's a good book. I recommend it. And perhaps it's a challenge that we need to hear. Perhaps if we want to grow a little bit more like Jesus, if we want that to be that seed that grows in good soil and produces a crop 100, 60, 30 times what was sown, as we were hearing last week, maybe we need to get out of the boat. Maybe we need to get out of the boat even if there is a storm raging around us. Maybe we need to get out of a boat even if we are not absolutely 100% cast iron certain that Jesus is in it and asking us to. I wonder what that boat is for you. That thing that you are tempted to put your trust in, particularly if you're in a storm. That thing which feels comfortable and familiar and that you don't want to give up, even if it's getting in the way of you joining that adventure that Jesus is inviting you to. Maybe that boat is financial security. Maybe Jesus is inviting you to sacrificial generosity. Maybe it's a job that is secure, but you don't really feel that you can grow or use your gifts in it, and God is inviting you into something else. Maybe it's just that life is pretty comfortable and you're settled. You've got a nice home, good friends. You come to church on a Sunday and meet people you've known for years. Life is good. The boat is comfortable. You've installed a flat screen TV. And you don't want to upset that nice pattern. You don't want to risk giving up your leisure time. You don't want to have the effort of building new relationships. Or maybe that boat is your reputation. Maybe you don't want to do something that other people will think is foolish or won't approve of. Maybe you don't want to risk failing. Which maybe leads us back to that next bit of the story. Peter looks away from Jesus. He remembers suddenly that he's in the middle of a storm and that there is only water under his feet, and he starts to sink. He calls out to Jesus, and Jesus rescues him. So all's well, isn't it? But gosh, how embarrassing. And in front of all his friends too. It does feel like a bit of a failure, doesn't it? But perhaps we need to think about this a bit differently. He had walked on water, even if only for a few steps. And he had also experienced firsthand that when he got it wrong, when things went wrong, he could call out to Jesus, and Jesus was there to help. Perhaps the greater failure was that of the disciples who stayed in the boat. They had the same opportunity to step out onto the waves, to know that incredible feeling of walking on water, but they didn't get out of the boat. Maybe their failure was a little bit less noticeable, a bit more private, a bit less embarrassing, but they still missed out. After Jesus' death and resurrection, Peter led the early church. He preached, he did miracles, he healed people. And although maybe this episode didn't end particularly well for him, getting out of that boat was one of the experiences that formed Peter into the person that he became. Each time we choose to trust God and step out of the boat, whether it goes fantastically well or ends in a bit of a flop, we learn to trust him a little bit more. We grow a little bit in our understanding of him. Our character becomes changed a little bit more to be like his. And maybe we're a bit more likely to get out of the boat next time. In that book I mentioned, John Ortberg's book, he tells the story of Sir Edmund Hillary. Sir Edmund Hillary made several unsuccessful attempts to scale Everest before he finally got to the top. And apparently after one of these, he stood at the bottom of the mountain and he shook his fist at it. And he said, "I am going to defeat you yet, because you are as big as you're ever going to get. And I am still growing." Are we still growing? If we want to grow, we have to be willing to risk failure. And when we fail, we can choose to learn from that and grow. And then as soon as Jesus got Peter safely back in the boat and climbed in beside him, the wind dies down. And all of those other disciples who had been looking on from the safety of the boat, well, they worshipped, didn't they? And who is this Jesus that they bowed down to worship? Tim asked us that earlier in the series, didn't he? What sort of Jesus is it that we are following? It's important, isn't it, that we follow Jesus, not sort of a made-up person. And if we look a bit more widely in Matthew 14 and 15, we see something of who that Jesus is. We see that he is full of compassion. In Matthew 14:14, when Jesus landed, remember he's gone off to try and have a bit of quiet time with his father, but he lands and sees a large crowd. He had compassion on them and healed those who were ill. Later in Matthew 15:32, "I have compassion for these people. They have already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. I don't want to send them away hungry, or they may collapse on the way." We see that Jesus does incredible miracles. He heals. He feeds firstly 5,000 men and women and children, and then 4,000. He walks on the water. He stills the storm. We see that Jesus stands up to power. He answers the Pharisees and the teachers and challenges what they are teaching. He's not always comfortable to be around. And we see that Jesus teaches with wisdom and with understanding. This is the Jesus that we are seeking to follow. This is the Jesus who the disciples worshipped when they said, "Truly, you are the Son of God." So I wonder what it is that you need to hear today from this story. Perhaps you need to hear God's reassurance that he sees you in the middle of your storm, that he is with you, that he can be trusted. Perhaps you need to take courage and step out of the boat. Perhaps he is inviting you into something new. Or perhaps you need to stop looking at the storm and look at Jesus instead and see him as he is, full of compassion for you, powerful to intervene in your life, offering you wise guidance. Maybe I can just ask you to close your eyes for a minute, if you will, and just imagine yourself for a moment in a boat, out on the sea. It's dark and it's cold. The wind is blowing. The boat is lurching up and down on the waves. And you're feeling a bit afraid. And you look out at that black water. And out of the darkness, you can see a figure coming towards you. And that figure is Jesus. In the quietness, just in your heart, what do you want to say to him just now? Maybe you want to start, like Peter, with, "Lord, if it is you." And just listen to what he is saying in reply. Maybe inviting you to come. "Truly, Lord Jesus, you are the Son of God. We worship you now."